Thank you, Larry. At this time, we're going to answer the questions in the chat box, but I'd also like to give people the opportunity to ask a question over the phone. If you would like to ask a question over the phone, please press star one on your phone keypad to be placed into the queue. Larry, I'll start with you. Tom Moyes has a question on your slide number four. Did the barge strike on the two bridges in Vicksburg cause extended closure of the two bridges in question? And were there any impacts to freight movements in the region as a result? Also, were the bridges hit by the barges highway or railroad bridges?
Actually, I think one of them was a rail bridge and one was a highway. That was my understanding. In this particular case, I believe there was a brief river closure, but that was fairly short-lived. There were some barges that were sunk, but my understanding was that they weren't in the navigation channel, so they didn't immediately affect navigation. And then also, as far as I understand that, I don't believe there was any damage to the bridges, but obviously, this is an example. Actually, there's been similar types of accidents in historically as well. Actually, I think at this bridge, at these set of bridges. So it provides, even if there isn't damage, you could sort of take a look at an event like that and say and understand that that it's a, obviously they could have had a disruption in navigation that was more significant. I believe the river was briefly closed and then reopened. So you could, I think what it does give you is sort of a picture of potential events, and obviously the event could have been worse and could be in the future if you had a different extreme flooding event.
Thank you, Larry. Our next question is for you, Mike. Is it fair to say the severity, geographical scope, and anticipation time for disruption events are also important considerations? For example, a large-scale snowstorm like the one predicted for the Northeast Mid-Atlantic on Friday and Saturday creates more impacts than, say, a tornado that touches down over a 5-mile path. However, a snowstorm can be more easily anticipated and creates less significant damage in the impact area than a tornado. What are your thoughts on the challenges associated with the aforementioned factors?
I think it's spot on. I mean, I think those considerations are absolutely critical to your consideration of the risk that you face as well as what it takes to improve resilience. So, for example, looking at a very intense storm or an intense event that has very high severity factor, or something that's very large in geographic scope, both of those will have big impacts on your potential consequences and overall the disruption to the supply chain. So as you're looking at this situation and trying to put this in a risk management framework, trying to assess what is really at stake here, which is what the consequence part of that equation does, is to say, well, the larger it is, the bigger the impact on the supply chain, at least potentially, and therefore the higher the risk. And that's got to be a consideration because on the other side of the equation, it's also a very important kind of thing to say, okay, now what can I do about that? How can I maintain the supply chain? How can I improve the resilience of the freight service in those cases? The prep time, I think, is a different kind of animal, but still critical. Any operator would say, sure, the more time I have, the better off I am. But the case that Larry was talking about, in the case of flooding at Memphis in the lower Mississippi, that's something that now we believe actually has a planning cycle to it. There's time to understand how precipitation in the Ohio Valley will cause flooding
totally
down at Memphis and give you time to prepare. This is great. It gives you the opportunity to reduce your vulnerability and therefore reduce your risk because ultimately your potential for damage goes down as you prepare for the impacts of a flood in that case, or as a storm is about to make landfall and you have time to prepare for this, you can move equipment out of harm's way. You can batten down the hatches, so to speak, So yeah, these are really critical kinds of things, and it's the kind of thing that you really have to get down into the weeds to understand. But the questioner is spot on.
Thank you, Mike. We do have a question over the phone. Jeff, could you please open the phone line?
Certainly. Your first question comes from the line of participant whose information was not gathered. Caller, if you've queued up for a question, please state your first and last name. Your line is open.
Hi, my name is Kirsten Mickelson. I have an observation. We're on the Upper Mississippi River. We're also working on defining ecological resilience. And resilience is a really hot topic that I think is getting a lot of national attention, and we are likely to get questions about what is the resilience of the system and what we're doing with the navigation system, not just the ecosystem. And on the ecosystem side, we're trying to look at it comprehensively and look at a variety of variables, both what they call flow variables that reduce the system's resilience overall. So like sedimentation would be something that would happen over time, versus fast variables like a flood that would essentially move the ecosystem in a state to a different state. So I'm trying to relate those concepts to the navigation system and think about its resilience both from weather-related events, but also infrastructure degradation over time, and you know, a whole host of variables, and how we might be able to measure that, and think about how that all plays together, as well as the connection to resilience of other modes and a national supply chain. Do you have any reactions to that, or have you tried to think about it as a whole system, and what state the inland navigation system is in, and how we might either use resilience to push it into an improved state, or how it might be pushed to a reduced state, given the variables?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a really important issue, and I mean, the environmental issues are really large and important. I guess although it wasn't necessarily a focus of this work that we did, what specifically you're talking about, I would mention, you know, we did in our survey of tools and so forth, we did identify some different perspectives and tools that you know, want to evaluate, you know, environmental services provided by the environment and maintaining the environment, and that's a sort of a different perspective or way of looking at this. And I think at least it sounds like it. That's maybe more of the perspective that you're coming from. But I think the point you raise is very important.
Yeah, and we're exploring options to increase the utilization of the inland waterways, and so some of the questions that we get are, how reliable is the system? And along with that goes, how resilient is the system? So is there a way of looking at it comprehensively, given all the long-term and quick resilience factors that can push it into a degraded state where it no longer functions as a reliable, efficient mode of transportation? So I'm just relating it back to environment, because that's where I'm getting the concepts from, given that we're discussing the concepts of resilience. So I was trying to relate it there, but I'm really asking about reliability or resilience of the inland navigation system as a whole.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing is that there is, to some extent, maybe a tension between the use of the waterways for freight movement and navigation, and also some of the environmental impacts associated with the engineering that's required to do that. I think that's a pretty complicated issue. I can't say that we went too far down that path, but I think that's definitely a larger perspective that needs to be considered.
And Larry, if I can jump in, I think one of the things that we do frequently is to look at a historical analysis and see when has service been curtailed and for what reason. So you can begin to build a database on the frequency of such events and the severity of such events, both in time or restrictions of some kind. And then you can begin to understand how frequently the system goes down today. You can speak to experts at the Corps of Engineers and the Coast Guard to some extent to understand, you know, what does it take to maintain operating conditions in the channel and the likelihood that those operations would not be maintained or would need to be increased in the future. And then you might be able to get at some subjective kinds of qualitative judgments to say, hey, this is how reliable the system is at present, and begin to think about at least how reliable it might be in the future.
Thank you both. Mike, we have a question, and I'll start with you. Can you please contrast resiliency planning versus scenario planning?
I would say that resiliency planning depends on scenario planning. So in transportation, on the surface side of things, we often try and project out 20 or 30 years, and we try to understand the future conditions. That's pretty challenging. It's also more of an art than a science, but that's really the basis of scenario planning. What are the future conditions that the service is going to be operated in? So what are the parameters? Well, there's the existing conditions. What's the population density? What are the existing congestion? What will future demographics or economic development patterns look like? And then we can overlay the extreme weather kinds of scenarios, in which we also don't know exactly. You know, we have indications that there'll be increased heavy precipitation in the Northeast, for example. So we begin to start saying, well, is it going to be 2-inch rainfalls 10 times a year, or is it going to be 2-inch rainfalls 30 times a year? And begin to understand what those possible futures look like and then bracket them. Then you place that in. That's part of your risk analysis, really. And then in that, you start doing resilience planning and starting to understand, well, here's the level of service that I would like to provide, both currently and in the future, and what does it take in order to do that? Now, if you're going to face increased flooding because of extreme precipitation events, increasing in severity or number, then you begin to want to make the improvements that are necessary, and that's part of your resilience plan.
Thank you, Mike. This is an observation, which I'm going to give you an opportunity to comment on. When you have a significant distance between parallel routes, such as in states out west, being able to address the disruption can be very problematic. In fact, being able to build additional highways is a long-term solution that may not be implementable in a timely manner to address such disruptions. Do either of you care to comment on Stephanie's observation?
Sure, I'll start. Trying to build redundancy on these major systems can be very challenging, and it's extremely challenging in a world where the Highway Trust Fund is unable to meet its expenditure authorizations, and it's unlikely to be any better in the future. It's a question of making the business case. Are there parts of that need to be done? Are there other improvements that can serve the same purpose? You know, one of the things about comprehensive resilience planning is trying to look at it not only from a capital investment point of view, but also thinking about operational changes, ways that we operate the system differently, how we maintain it differently, or ultimately, where we put new facilities in the future. Resilience planning is going to be perhaps an important element of future siting of freight facilities, particularly where the impacts are already fairly severe, and we project that they're going to be even more severe. Then you can make the business case that you want to put it, assuming you have to put it somewhere, you have to put a new facility in place. Where are you going to put it? Then putting it in a less risky location certainly helps. But finding the funding is always going to be a challenge, and it's always going to compete against state of good repair and other kinds of.
Thank you, Mike. We have two more questions now. I know we're a little past time, but I hope everybody can stick with us since we had a delay in our start to get through our last two questions. Nathan would like to know, I'm in a landlocked region, Albuquerque, New Mexico, but at the crossroads of two interstates with high levels of interstate freight traffic, I-40 and I-25. Although much of the information here on inland waterways can be translated to land-based logistical impacts, are there comparable reports that focus on freight corridors on non-waterways?
Sure, there are. I always have trouble coming up with examples off the tip of my tongue. But the understanding, at least of extreme weather events with regard to highways and roads, is getting to be pretty well understood. The Federal Highway Pilots, the framework that they did, the Gulf Coast study that they did, all have provided important inputs, as well as many other studies. I don't want to limit it to the Federal Highway studies, but along with many other studies that really helped to dig into what are the risks, at least of extreme weather and climate change, to roads that carry truck traffic or any other kind of traffic. So certainly there are things that can be understood. It really kind of depends on what those risks are and how you might reconfigure the system, if in fact that's where the resilience planning leads you. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Mike. And our last question, for the past 50 years or so, our society has moved to a flexible supply model. At one time, factories had to be located close to ports in order to help assure somewhat predictable delivery schedules. Containerization allowed factories and suppliers to be remote from users. Just-in-time processes made the delivery systems even more precarious. Do we need to move back to more inventory-focused systems in order to account for resiliency?
I mean, I guess the one thing I would say about this is that, obviously businesses are making a decision about how much inventory to hold and how much transportation to use based on their assessment of the cost, and then also projections about how reliable it's going to be. So I think that, maybe a key input into that process would be, if we understand what the risks are, if we better understand them, then businesses can make better decisions about how to manage their own operations. So that's I think, a key perspective.
Yeah, just-in-time delivery certainly raises the stakes considerably and raises the importance of a reliable freight system to bring commodities to users. Ultimately, if that system begins to break down and we cannot provide reliable service, it'll be the economics that tell us whether or not we need to go back to a warehousing-based model or something else that I can't foresee right now. Now, if we cannot provide the service, then others will step in and say, I can provide reliable service. It just may not be quite as fast, and it may have slight increases in economic cost because of warehousing. But you offset that with the risk of perhaps severe or more severe disruptions in the service due to extreme weather or geophysical events. So it's going to come down to the tolerances and the overall economics.
Thank you both. We've now gotten through all of the questions, so I think we're going to go ahead and close out. The recorded version of this event will be available in the next few weeks on the Talking Freight website. The next seminar will be held on February 17th, and the topic is tentatively scheduled to be USDOT National Freight Strategic Plan. Registration is not yet available, but I will send out a notice through the Freight Planning Listserv announcing the topic and the availability of registration. I encourage you to join the Freight Planning Listserv if you have not already done so. Thank you to our presenters and to everyone for attending today. Please enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.
That went reasonably well.
Once we got over.
As far as the content, I'm convinced something in this room. I'm convinced.